24. Men of Blood and Sorrow. I have no doubt that you are smarter than I am. I can only relate what happened, what I have done, and then let you draw conclusions. From Oathbringer, Preface. Dalinar remembered. Her name had been Evie. She'd been tall and willowy, with pale yellow hair, not true golden like the hair of the Irriali, but striking in its own right. She'd been quiet, shy, both she and her brother, for all that they'd been willing to flee their homeland in an act of courage. They'd brought Shardplate, and that was all that had emerged over the last few days. The rest was still a blur. He could recall meeting Evie, courting her, awkwardly, since both knew it was an arrangement of political necessity, and eventually entering into a casual betrothal. He didn't remember love, but he did remember attraction. The memories brought questions, like kremlings emerging from their hollows after the rain. He ignored them, standing straight-backed with a line of guards on the field in front of Yuathiru, suffering a bitter wind from the west. This wide plateau held some dumps of wood, as part of this space would probably end up being a lumberyard. Behind him, the end of a rope blew in the wind, smacking a pile of wood again and again. A pair of windspren danced past, in the shapes of little people. "Why am I remembering Evie now?" Dalinar wondered. "And why have I recovered only my first memories of our time together?" He had always remembered the difficult years following Evie's death, which had culminated in his being drunk and useless on the night Zeth, the assassin in white, had killed his brother. He assumed that he'd gone to the Night Watcher to be rid of the pain at losing her, and the Spren had taken his other memories as payment. He didn't know for certain, but that seemed right. Bargains with the Night Watcher were supposed to be permanent, damning, even. So what was happening to him? Dalinar glanced at his bracer clocks strapped to his forearm. 5 minutes late. Storms. He'd been wearing the thing barely a few days, and already he was counting minutes like a scribe. The second of the two watch faces, which would count down to the next high storm, still hadn't been engaged. A single high storm had come, blessedly, carrying stormlight to renew spheres. It seemed like so long since they'd had enough of that. However, it would take until the next high storm for the scribes to make guesses at the current pattern. Even then they could be wrong, as the weeping had lasted far longer than it should have. Centuries, millennia, of careful records might now be obsolete. Once, that alone would have been a catastrophe. It threatened to ruin planting seasons and cause famines, to upend travel and shipping, disrupting trade. Unfortunately, in the face of the Everstorm and the Voidbringers, it was barely third on the list of cataclysms. The cold wind blew at him again. Before them, the grand plateau of Yuathiru was ringed by 10 large platforms, each raised about 10 feet high, with steps up beside a ramp for carts. At the center of each one was a small building containing the device that, with a bright flash, an expanding wave of stormlight spread outward from the center of the second platform from the left. When the light faded, Dalinar led his troop of honor guards up the wide steps to the top. They crossed to the building at the center, where a small group of people had stepped out and were now gawking at Yuathiru, surrounded by Ospren. Dalinar smiled. The sight of a tower as wide as a city and as tall as a small mountain? Well, there wasn't anything else like it in the world. At the head of the newcomers was a man in burnt orange robes. Aged, with a kindly, clean-shaven face, he stood with his head tipped back and jaw lowered as he regarded the city. Near him stood a woman with silvery hair pulled up in a bun. Adratagia, the head Carbranthian scribe. Some thought she was the true power behind the throne. Others guessed it was that other scribe, the one they had left running Carbranth in its king's absence. whoever it was. They kept Taravangian as a figurehead, and Dalinar was happy to work through him to get to Yakaved and Carbranth. This man had been a friend to Gavilar. That was good enough for Dalinar. And he was more than glad to have at least one other monarch at Urithiru. Taravangian smiled at Dalinar, then licked his lips. He seemed to have forgotten what he wanted to say and had to glance at the woman beside him for support. She whispered, and he spoke loudly after the reminder.
"Blackthorn," Taravangian said. "It is an honor to meet you again. It has been too long."
"Your Majesty," Dalinar said, "thank you so much for responding to my call."
Dalinar had met Taravangian several times years ago. He remembered a man of quiet, keen intelligence. That was gone now. Taravangian had always been humble and had kept to himself, so most didn't know he'd been intelligent once, before his strange illness 5 years ago, which Navani was fairly certain covered an apoplexy that had permanently wounded his mental capacities. Adratagia touched Taravangian's arm and nodded toward someone standing with the Carbranthian guards. A middle-aged, light-eyed woman, wearing a skirt and blouse after a southern style, with the top buttons of the blouse undone. Her hair was short in a boyish cut, and she wore gloves on both hands. The strange woman stretched her right hand over her head, and a shard blade appeared in it. She rested it with the flat side against her shoulder.
"Ah, yes,"
Taravangian said.
"Introductions. A Blackthorn. This is the newest Knight Radiant, Malata of Yakaved."
King Taravangian gawked like a child as they rode the lift toward the top of the tower. He leaned over the side far enough that his large Thalen bodyguard rested a careful hand on the king's shoulder just in case.
"So many levels," Taravangian said. "And this balcony. Tell me, Bright Lord, what makes it move?"
His sincerity was so unexpected. Dalinar had been around Alethi politicians so much that he found honesty an obscure thing, like a language he no longer spoke.
"My engineers are still studying the lifts," Dalinar said. "It has to do with conjoined fabrials, they believe, with gears to modulate speed."
Taravangian blinked.
"Oh, I meant, is this Stormlight? Or is someone pulling somewhere? We had Parshman do ours back in Carbranth."
"Stormlight," Dalinar said. "We had to replace the gemstones with infused ones to make it work."
"Ah."
He shook his head, grinning. In Alethkar, this man would never have been able to hold a throne after the apoplexy struck him. An unscrupulous family would have removed him by assassination. In other families, someone would have challenged him for his throne. He'd have been forced to fight or abdicate. Or, well, someone might have muscled him out of power and acted like king in all but name. Dalinar sighed softly, but kept a firm grip on his guilt. Taravangian wasn't Alethi. In Carbranth, which didn't wage war, a mild, congenial figurehead made more sense. The city was supposed to be unassuming, unthreatening. It was a twist of luck that Taravangian had also been crowned king of Yakaved, once one of the most powerful kingdoms on Roshar, following its civil war. He would normally have had trouble keeping that throne, but perhaps Dalinar might lend him some support, or at least authority, through association. Dalinar certainly intended to do everything he could.
"Your Majesty," Dalinar said, stepping closer to Taravangian, "how well guarded is Vaidenar? I have a great number of troops with too much idle time. I could easily spare a battalion or two to help secure the city. We can't afford to lose the Oathgate to the enemy."
Taravangian glanced at Adratagia. She answered for him.
"This city is secure, Bright Lord. You needn't fear.
The Parshmen made one push for the city, but there are still many Vaden troops available. We fended the enemy off, and they withdrew eastward.
Toward Alethkar, Dalinar thought. Taravangian again looked out into the wide central column, lit from the sheer glass window to the east.
Ah, how I wish this day hadn't come.
You sound as if you anticipated it, Your Majesty, Dalinar said. Taravangian laughed softly.
Don't you? Anticipate sorrow, I mean. Sadness, loss.
I try not to hasten my expectations in either direction, Dalinar said. The soldier's way. Deal with today's problems, then sleep and deal with tomorrow's problems tomorrow. Taravangian nodded.
I remember, as a child, listening to an ardent pray to the Almighty on my behalf as glyph wards burned nearby.
I remember thinking, surely the sorrows can't be past us. Surely the evils didn't actually end.
If they had, wouldn't we be back in the Tranquiline Halls even now?
He looked toward Dalinar, and surprisingly there were tears in his pale gray eyes.
I do not think you and I are destined for such a glorious place. Men of blood and sorrow don't get an ending like that, Dalinar Kholin.
Dalinar found himself without a reply. Adrotegia gripped Taravangian on the forearm with a comforting gesture, and the old king turned away, hiding his emotional outburst. What had happened in Vaidenar must have troubled him deeply. The death of the previous king, the field of slaughter. They rode the rest of the way in silence, and Dalinar took the chance to study Taravangian's surge binder. She'd been the one to unlock, then activate, the Vaden Oath Gate on the other side, which she'd managed after some careful instructions from Navani. Now the woman, Malata, leaned idly against the side of the balcony. She hadn't spoken much during their tour of the first three levels, and when she looked at Dalinar, she always seemed to have a hint of a smile on her lips. She carried a wealth of spears in her skirt pocket. The light shone through the fabric. Perhaps that was why she smiled. He himself felt relieved to have light at his fingertips again, and not only because it meant the Alethi Soulcasters could get back to work, using their emeralds to transform rock to grain to feed the hungry people of the tower. Navani met them at the top level, immaculate in an ornate silver and black haba, her hair in a bun and stabbed through with hair spikes meant to resemble shard blades. She greeted Taravangian warmly, then clasped hands with Adrotegia. After a greeting, Navani stepped back and let Teshev guide Taravangian and his little retinue into what they were calling the initiation room. Navani herself drew Dalinar to the side.
"Well," she whispered.
"He's as sincere as ever," Dalinar said softly. "But..."
"Dense?"
she asked.
"Dear, I'm dense. This man has become an idiot."
"You're not dense, Dalinar," she said. "You're rugged, practical."
"I've no illusions as to the thickness of my skull, Gemheart. It's done right by me on more than one occasion. Better a thick head than a broken one. But I don't know that Taravangian, in his current state, will be of much use."
"Bah," Navani said. "We've more than enough clever people around us, Dalinar. Taravangian was always a friend to Alethkar during your brother's reign, and a little illness shouldn't change our treatment of him."
"You're right, of course."
He trailed off.
"There's an earnestness to him, Navani, and a melancholy I hadn't remembered. Was that always there?"
"Yes, actually."
She checked her own arm clock, like his own, though with a few more gemstones attached. Some kind of new fabrial she was tinkering with.
"Any news from Captain Kaladin?"
She shook her head. It had been days since his last check-in, but he'd likely run out of infused rubies. Now that the high storms had returned, they'd expected something. In the room, Teshev gestured to the various pillars, each representing an order of Night Radiant. Dalinar and Navani waited in the doorway, separated from the rest.
"What of the Surge Binder?"
Navani whispered.
"A releaser. Dustbringer, though they don't like the term. She claims her spren told her that."
He rubbed his chin.
"I don't like how she smiles."
"If she's truly a Radiant,"
Navani said,
"can she be anything but trustworthy? Would the spren pick someone who would act against the best interests of the orders?"
Another question he didn't know the answer to. He'd need to see if he could determine whether her shard blade was only that, or if it might be another honor blade in disguise. The touring group moved down a set of steps toward the meeting chamber, which took up most of the penultimate level, and sloped down to the level below. Dalinar and Navani trailed after them.
"Navani," he thought, "on my arm."
It still gave him a heady, surreal feeling. Dreamlike, as if this were one of his visions. He could vividly remember desiring her, thinking about her, captivated by the way she talked, the things she knew, the look of her hands as she sketched, or storms as she did something as simple as raising a spoon to her lips. He remembered staring at her. He remembered a specific day on a battlefield when he had almost let his jealousy of his brother lead him too far, and was surprised to feel Evie slipping into that memory. Her presence colored the old, crusty memory of those war days with his brother.
"My memories continue to return," he said softly as they paused at the door into the conference room. "I can only assume that eventually it will all come back."
"That shouldn't be happening."
"I thought the same. But really, who can say? The old magic is said to be inscrutable."
"No,"
Navani said, folding her arms, getting a stern expression on her face, as if angry with a stubborn child.
"In each case I've looked into, the boon and curse both lasted until death."
"Each case?" Dalinar said. "How many did you find?"
"About 300 at this point," Navani said. "It's been difficult to get any time from the researchers at the Palinaeum. Everyone the world over is demanding research into the Voidbringers. Fortunately, His Majesty's impending visit here earned me special consideration, and I had some credit. They say it's best to patronize the place in person. At least Jasnah always said..."
She took a breath, steadying herself before continuing.
"In any case, Dalinar, the research is definitive. We haven't been able to find a single case where the effects of the old magic wore off. And it's not like people haven't tried over the centuries. Lore about people dealing with their curses and seeking any cure for them is practically its own genre. As my researcher said, old magic curses aren't like a hangover, Brightness."
She looked up at Dalinar and must have seen the emotion in his face, for she cocked her head.
"What?"
she asked.
"I've never had anyone to share this burden with," he said softly. "Thank you."
"I didn't find anything."
"It doesn't matter."
"Could you at least confirm with the Stormfather again that his bond with you is absolutely, for sure, not what's causing the memories to come back?"
"I'll see." The Stormfather rumbled, "Why would she want me to say more? I have spoken, and spren do not change like men. This is not my doing. It is not the bond."
"He says it's not him," Dalinar said.
"He's annoyed at you for asking again."
She kept her arms crossed. This was something she shared with her daughter, a characteristic frustration with problems she couldn't solve, as if she were disappointed in the facts for not arranging themselves more helpfully.
"Maybe," she said, "something was different about the deal you made. If you can recount your visit to me sometime, with as much detail as you can remember, I'll compare it to other accounts.
He shook his head. There wasn't much. The valley had a lot of plants, and I remember I asked to have my pain taken away, and she took memories too. I think?
He shrugged, then noticed Navani pursing her lips, her stare sharpening.
I'm sorry, I...
It's not you, Navani said. It's the Night Watcher. Giving you a deal when you were probably too distraught to think straight, then erasing your memory of the details?
She's a Spren. I don't think we can expect her to play by, or even understand, our rules.
He wished he could give her more, but even if he could dredge up something, this wasn't the time. They should be paying attention to their guests. Teshav had finished pointing out the strange glass panes on the inner walls that seemed like windows, only clouded. She moved on to the pairs of discs on the floor and ceiling that looked something like the top and bottom of a pillar that had been removed, a feature of a number of rooms they'd explored. Once that was done, Teravangian and Adrotagia returned to the top of the room, near the windows. The new radiant Mulatta lounged in a seat near the wall-mounted sigil of the Dustbringers, staring at it. Dalinar and Navani climbed the steps to stand by Teravangian.
Breathtaking, isn't it? Dalinar asked. An even better view than from the lift.
Overwhelming, Teravangian said. So much space. We think that we are the most important things on Roshar. Yet so much of Roshar is empty of us.
Dalinar cocked his head. Yes, perhaps some of the old Teravangian lingered in there somewhere.
Is this where you'll have us meet? Adrotagia asked, nodding toward the room. When you've gathered all the monarchs, will this be our council chamber?
No, Dalinar said. This seems too much like a lecture hall. I don't want the monarchs to feel as if they're being preached to.
And... when will they come? Teravangian asked, hopeful. I am looking forward to meeting the others. The King of Aesir. Didn't you tell me there was a new one, Adrotagia? I know Queen Fen. She's very nice. Will we be inviting the Shin? So mysterious. Do they even have a king? Don't they live in tribes or something? Like Marathi barbarians?
Adrotagia tapped his arm fondly, but looked to Dalinar, obviously curious about the other monarchs. Dalinar cleared his throat, but Navani spoke.
So far, Your Majesty, she said, you are the only one who has heeded our warning call.
Silence followed.
Thelena,
Adrotagia asked hopefully.
We've exchanged communications on 5 separate occasions, Navani said. In each one, the Queen has dodged our requests. Aesir has been even more stubborn.
Eri dismissed us almost outright, Dalinar said with a sigh. Neither Marabethia nor Rira would respond to the initial request. There's no real government in the Reshi Isles, or some of the Middle States. Babatharnam's most ancient has been Koi, and most of the Makabaki states imply that they're waiting for Aesir to make a decision. The Shin sent only a quick reply to congratulate us, whatever that means.
Hateful people, Teravangian said. Murdering so many worthy monarchs.
Yes, Dalinar said, uncomfortable at the king's sudden change in attitude. Our primary focus has been on places with oath gates, for strategic reasons. Aesir, Thalen City, and Eri seem most essential. However, we've made overtures to everyone who will listen, Oathgate or no. New Natanan is being coy so far, and the Herdazians think I'm trying to trick them. The Tukari scribes keep claiming they will bring my words to their god king.
Navani cleared her throat.
We actually got a reply from him just a bit ago. Teshav's ward was monitoring the Spanreads. It's not exactly encouraging.
I'd like to hear it anyway.
She nodded and went to collect it from Teshev. Adrotegia gave him a questioning glance, but he didn't dismiss the two of them. He wanted them to feel they were part of an alliance, and perhaps they would have insights that would prove helpful. Navani returned with a single sheet of paper. Dalinar couldn't read the script on it, but the lines seemed sweeping and grand, imperious.
"A warning," Navani read, "from Tazim the Great, last and first man, herald of heralds and bearer of the Oath Pact. His grandness, immortality, and power be praised. Lift up your heads and hear, men of the East, of your God's proclamation. None are radiant but him. His fury is ignited by your pitiful claims, and your unlawful capture of his holy city is an act of rebellion, depravity, and wickedness. Open your gates, men of the East, to his righteous soldiers and deliver unto him your spoils. Renounce your foolish claims and swear yourselves to him. The judgment of the final storm has come to destroy all men, and only his path will lead to deliverance. He deigns to send you this single mandate, and will not speak it again. Even this is far above what your carnal natures deserve."
She lowered the paper. "Wow," Adrotegia said. "Well, at least it's clear."
Taravangian scratched at his head, brow furrowed, as if he didn't agree with that statement at all.
"I guess," Dalinar said, "we can cross the Tukare off our list of possible allies."
"I'd rather have the Emuli anyway," Navani said. "Their soldiers might be less capable, but they're also, well, not crazy."
"So, we are alone?"
Taravangian said, looking from Dalinar to Adrotegia, uncertain.
"We are alone, Your Majesty," Dalinar said. "The end of the world has come, and still nobody will listen."
Taravangian nodded to himself.
"Where do we attack first? Hedaz? My aides say it is the traditional first step for an Alethi aggression, but they also point out that if you could somehow take Thelana, you'd completely control the straits and even the depths."
Dalinar listened to the words with dismay. It was the obvious assumption, so clear that even simple-minded Taravangian saw it. What else to make of Alethkar proposing a union? Alethkar, the great conquerors. Led by the Blackthorn, the man who had united his own kingdom by the sword. It was the suspicion that had tainted every conversation with the other monarchs.
Storms, he thought. Taravangian didn't come because he believed in my grand alliance. He assumed that if he didn't, I wouldn't send my armies to Hedaz or Thelana. I'd send them to Yarkaved, to him. "We're not going to attack anyone," Dalinar said. "Our focus is on the Voidbringers, the true enemy. We will win the other kingdoms with diplomacy."
Taravangian frowned.
"But..."
Adrotegia, however, touched him on the arm and quieted him.
"Of course, Bright Lord," she said to Dalinar. "We understand."
She thought he was lying.
"And are you?
What would he do if nobody listened? How would he save Roshar without the Oath Gates, without resources?"
"If our plan to reclaim Kolinar works," he thought, "wouldn't it make sense to take the other gates the same way? Nobody would be able to fight both us and the Voidbringers. We could seize their capitals and force them, for their own good, to join our unified war effort."
He'd been willing to conquer Alethkar for its own good. He'd been willing to seize the kingship in all but name, again for the good of his people. How far would he go for the good of all Roshar? How far would he go to prepare them for the coming of that enemy, a champion with 9 shadows?
"I will unite instead of divide."
He found himself standing at that window beside Taravangian, staring out over the mountains, his memories of Evie carrying with them a fresh and dangerous perspective.